Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Arauco's fourth quarter 2019 results conference call. Today, we have with us Mr. Dion Franco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a Q&A session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star, then zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on the beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of the management of the company based on current available information. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations, and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Arauco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to quarterly and annual Arauco filings with the Chilean CMF and U.S. SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. Mr. Gianfranco, you may please start your conference.
Okay, thanks, and welcome everyone to this conference call for the results of the fourth quarter of 2019. As usual, we will go through the financial numbers of the company, and then we will dive into the specific business segment and talk a little bit about the outlook and recent events. If we can start on page four, we have a summary of the main numbers for the quarter and also for the year. And you can see there that we had for the quarter, decreasing revenues of 13% from almost 4 billion to 1.2 billion revenues for the quarter. Our net income was negative 92 million for the quarter. That compares with a negative 30 million for the third quarter. Our EBITDA went down 11% from 238 million to $211 million. And our net debt went up 5.6% to almost $4.5 billion. Our leverage went up from 3.3 times to 3.9 times. If we look at the annual numbers, we can see that our revenues went down 10% from 5.95 billion to 5.33 billion. Our net income went sharply down from $727 million obtained in the fiscal year 2018 to $62 million in the fiscal year 2019. And our EBITDA went down 38% from $1.85 billion to $1.15 billion during the complete year of 2019. We will go through the explanations of these figures through the presentation. So if we start in page five with the revenues, we can see that the decrease of 13% was basically explained by a reduction of $96 million in the wood product division. That was 13% lower than the previous quarter. And it was a decrease in basically 7.7% in sales volume and a small decrease of 2% in average prices. And then we had a decrease of $84 million in the pulp division, or 14%, and that was explained by a 15% decrease in sales volume compared to the third quarter and a 3% decrease in average prices. We can see in the pie chart the distribution of sales. 44% went to the pulp division, 53% to the wood products, 2.7% to forestry sales to third parties and others. In terms of cost of sales, we have a decrease of 10% or $104 million. And this is explained basically by a decrease in the line of forestry works and other costs that is associated with lower sales volume and also because of lower costs associated to road construction. Roads used during the summer season are cheaper because are easy to maintain than those that are built during winter. That's why the consumption of those roads is less costly. Also, we had a reduction in chemical cost and energy because basically explained by lower sales volume in the pulp division. If we look at the unitary cost of sales in for pulp, we can see that we had a reduction of 5.7% in softwood. That is explained by lower maintenance cost, lower wood cost, and lower energy and fuel. In hardwood, we have an increase of 9.6% in unitary cost. That is explained by higher wood cost, higher maintenance and fixed cost, explained by lower production, almost a 20% lower production during the quarter because of the stoppages of maintenance at Valdivia and especially Montes del Plata mill in Uruguay that had hit annual maintenance during the fourth quarter. In unbleached softwood pulp, we have an increase in unitary cost of 3.4%. That is explained by higher maintenance and depreciation, also explained by a little bit of reduction in production, about 10%, due to the Lichtenfeld stop at the end of the year and some other small production stoppages. We go to page 6. We have also a decrease in distribution costs, 14%, and that is explained basically by lower sales volume in pulp and wood products. That also impacted commissions that we pay to our agents and sales offices. So this line decreased from $160 million to $138 million. We have also a lower number in administrative expenses, a 10% decrease or $14 million. Here, the main decrease goes in the line of wages, salaries, and severance indemnities. That decreased $13.8 million, so explaining most of the decrease in the whole administrative expenses. This is a 22% decrease in that line, and the explanation is basically due to a provision reversal that was associated with annual bonus payments that we were accruing during the year. A big portion of the administrative expenses are denominated in Chilean peso, and because of the depreciation of the Chilean peso during the quarter, which was not so much, 3%, but also affected our administrative cost expressed in U.S. dollars. Now moving to page 7, in other income, we see an increase of $17 million that is explained, $8 million of those explained by a higher gain from changes in fair value of biological assets. The main explanation here is a reversal of a provision done of supposedly burned forest that we had in our accounting that was reversed during the quarter, and that explains an increase in the line of gains from changes in fair value of biological assets. Also, we have other operating results that increased by 6.6. This is also due to a provision reversal that is associated with basically accounts payable. Every year we look at the accounts payable that we had with more than 5 years without receiving an invoice, and then we reverse that liability, and that, of course, it accounts for operating result. That was basically about $4 million of those. And then we have some small things like a sale of land that was contributed to a JV that accounted for $1.3 million. In the line of other expenses, we have a big increase of almost $80 million or 200%. And this is basically due to an increase in impairment provision for PP&E that is associated with the closure of the Eugene mill in North America, and also some spare parts provision done in other mills. So in this line also, we are accounting in both quarters of the deterioration of the line one of Arauco that will be closed once we start MAPA project. And that is equivalent of about $17 million per quarter. So it's similar each quarter. Then we have some operational expenses related to the stoppages of program maintenance in Valdivia. So the total deteriorations and impairments done in the quarter was about $80 million, and about half of that was associated with the stoppages and the deteriorations of mills in the U.S. Page 8, we have a summary of the income statement. We already talked about the most of the lines in this income statement. The only things to mention is the financial income went up because we have a higher cash balance. We ended the year with $1.5 billion. Also, higher financial costs due to more debt and some financial expenses associated with the repurchase of bonds during the quarter. We have an increasing share of profits of associates and joint ventures. So we went from a loss of $6 million to a gain of $4 million. During the third quarter, we had losses associated with Sonora Arauco that were not done this quarter. And also we had a gain in this quarter associated with Valle do Corisco that helped obtain a $4 million gain this time. In other income, 21.7, we have the accounting of negative goodwill associated with the acquisition of the Mexican assets that we did last year. That explained $21 million of gain. Now moving to page 9, we see an evolution of the adjusted EBITDA. We see how adjusted EBITDA went down during the year 2019, basically following the decrease in average prices of pulp. The $211 million of the quarter is divided in $68 million in pulp, $33 million in wood products, $22 million in forestry, and some adjustments and consolidations. The decrease is basically explained by an $80 million decrease in the pulp division that was partially offset by an increase in $10 million in wood products and $16.8 million in forestry. In the case of increase in forestry of $16.8 million, we saw better cost and better pricing that accounted about for $10 million. Then we have the Valle do Corisco effect of $4 million, and then we have a decrease in lower administrative expenses for about $3 million. So that explains the better results in forestry. In the case of wood products, it's basically an accounting reversal due to end-of-the-year adjustments in some costs associated with grading that basically moved from the third quarter to the fourth quarter, and basically it should have been more or less stable in terms of operational levels. Now we're moving to review by business segment and outlook. So we start with pulp in page 11. We can see an evolution of the indexes of pulp prices, the PIX pulp prices. And we can see there that what we have seen for many quarters is a decrease in prices from the peak of pricing that we saw about in November year 18. And you can see that the prices in China, which is a better reflection of net prices, were more or less stable during the fourth quarter, and with a spread between softwood and hardwood were about 114 tons. In terms of demand for the whole year of 19 compared to 18, we saw a 3.1% increase that was explained by a very big demand increase in China of 18%, balanced by a decrease in demand of 7.4% in Europe. That has been the trend for many years in decreasing demand in Europe. The 3.1% increase in demand probably is around an average increase in world demand for pulp. In terms of global producers' inventory levels, here we have some good news. I mean, we are back to normal levels in terms of days of supply. We see that in softwood, we are now on 35 days, and in hardwood, 39 days, which is very, I would say, healthy for the market. At some time, we were at a peak of 68 days in hardwood and 46 days in softwood. So this is basically explained by a reduction in inventories in basically in the ports in China owned by some Brazilian suppliers. Page 12, we look at the EBITDA. We can see there the reduction of EBITDA from the third quarter of $148 to $68 million. That is a 50% decrease. That is explained by basically by lower volume, 15%, because we had a higher than normal, let's say, a sales volume in the third quarter, close to a little bit more than 1 million. And the 900,000, sorry, is more close to the average, which for the full year was 940. Total sales for the year were 3,747,000 tons, and the production was very similar, 3,721,000. So we take the average of the sales would be 940. So we're saying that quarter three was higher than average, and quarter four was a little bit lower than average. But we sold everything that we produced. We even reduced inventory from third quarter to fourth quarter. In terms of what happened in the market in fourth quarter, we saw that the beginning of the quarter was affected by the continuing trade conflict between the China and the U.S. At the end of the year, we saw some good news because of the phase one of the trade deal between China and the U.S. And we saw Chinese paper producers with good margins due to high demand and, of course, low raw material cost. And in Europe also, we saw that paper demand was starting to recover at the end of the fourth quarter. But producers' margin remained low because they weren't able to increase prices at that time. In terms of pricing, you can see that we had a stable prices in softwood, and we had a small increase of hardwood, $5 at the end in December. That was the situation at the end of the quarter. So with good perspectives come ending the year. If we look at now the outlook in page 13, we saw that during the first month, January, February, we saw good demand, and we were able to raise prices for February of $20 for all fibers in our case. But the effects, of course, of the coronavirus changed the positive feelings about the market at the beginning of March, and that led us to decrease $10 in hardwood for March. We maintained the price for softwood. The other reason was that we were almost the only ones able to raise prices on February. We didn't have anyone else following a price, so that's why we had to adjust a little bit on March. What we have seen is that our sales were not materially affected. We were a little bit oversold for March, even for April, especially for softwood. Hardwood was a little bit different because we had a little bit of excess volume that came from Valdivia mill that was supposed to be producing more dissolving at the beginning of the year and was still producing hardwood. What we have seen is that we see a normalization in activity and logistics in China. Things are picking up, and we see more activity everywhere in China. So we are more positive on the demand coming from that country as activity in factories is picking up. Europe for us is more of a concern because of the latest development in the evolution of coronavirus, especially in Italy. And that still is a developing story to see what will happen in Europe. The thing is, we are not so exposed to Europe. We only sell about 15%, but other competitors are more exposed to Europe, and probably they will be start to sell more in China, trying to compensate for the volume they won't be able to sell in Europe. Probably we will see stable prices in the coming month. We don't see any probably decrease because, I mean, we think that we're still close to the bottom. But, I mean, we still need to see what happens with coronavirus and the market developments. In terms of maintenance stoppages, we had the stoppage in Valdivia that was longer because of the change to dissolving pulp. And also we had the Montes de Plata during the fourth quarter of 10 days. In the first quarter, we had Arauco Line 1 already completed and the one that we did in Licancel, but also Licancel was stopped and still stopped because of the diminishing river flow in the Mataquito River. So, but we were able to anticipate the stoppages the annual stoppage for the maintenance stoppage for Lincoln Cell. And what we had planned is the annual stoppage for Constitucion and then Noraldea during the second quarter and Arauco Line 1. So page 14, if we move to wood products, here we have an increase in EBITDA for the wood product division, 73. Again, this is increases basically explained by some accounting adjustments. So in operational level, probably we saw more or less the same EBITDA that was with lower volume, but compensated with a better cost in general of production. So if we take out the adjustments of accounting related to grayling, probably the EBITDA should have been stable. If we look to 1 year ago, we had $85 million of EBITDA, and that is explained that year over year we had better prices basically in solid wood. In terms of the market, panel revenues decreased due to lower sales and volume. The Latin American market was more complex than during the third quarter. Brazil was affected by economic growth and higher MDF supply. But in the U.S. and Canada, we saw stability in the market despite seasonality. There's some oversupply, especially because of imports coming from Brazil, because of the depreciation of the real, and some coming from China. In the case of some timber, during the fourth quarter, we were affected by the trade war. And great supply coming from Europe, especially, and also some coming from Russia. In terms of plywood, markets were affected by oversupply. The market in North America remained stable. We adjusted some production during the fourth quarter, and we were able to decrease some stock in plywood. Page 15, you can see our production sales in panels, some timber and plywood, and we have a 8% decrease in sales of panels, production basically stable at 1.5 million. Also in some timber, production very stable and a 7% decrease in sales. And in plywood, we more or less maintained the sales, but we decreased production, so we were able to decrease and rebalance some of the stock that we had in plywood. Page 16, the outlook for wood products. We can start with the housing start index. We can see there that we had a quite good numbers at the end of 2020 with housing starts now reaching $1.56 million and very healthy numbers also in the single family housing, which is, has more percentage of wood in construction. And with that, we had in US and Canada a market that we expect to remain stable, so some seasonality that could lead to better results, in particular board and MDF. MDF is somehow affected a little bit by oversupply, some imports coming also there. And in Mexico, we see a balanced market between domestic and imports, and some slight improvements in markets that we consider positive. In remanufactured wood products, the expectations are positive, better housing numbers, seasonality, and some anti-dumping duties against Chinese and Brazilian producers. So in general, we see for some timber and plywood, good numbers. So we see that we're starting the year with positive expectations. Page 17, now going to other markets, Central and South America, which represent 30% of our sales, remains in Brazil a little bit complex because some oversupply in MDF and particleboard. Structurally, the Brazilian market has more capacity than demand. Capacity is very close to 10 to 11 million tons, and demand probably is about 8 million, cubic meters. So that has been happening for some time now, and we still need some time to recover the capacity ratios there. We had some optimism due to economic recovery, and the devaluation of the currency in Brazil is affecting our returns in dollars, but also pushing some exports from Brazil that could take some pressure from the local markets. In Argentina, we see that panel sales should increase, but sales of some timber are looking more complex, but it's not very significant, the numbers that we sell in Argentina, especially in some timber. The political situation also, of course, is putting some risk in terms of exchange rates that has been quite stable, but could change in the future. In Chile, we saw better sales than expected during the summer here. From March onwards, we were expecting some complex situation because of social development in Chile that has been better than expected. That the first, let's say, 10 days has been better than expected in terms of disturbances. So we think we're going to be probably better. And then in the other markets, Asia and Oceania, which represents 8%, the market has some additional uncertainties about coronavirus, but we are seeing some increases in demand, and we are a little bit positive on Asia. The rest, Europe and Middle East, is only 4%. We saw some positive price movements in plywood, but I mean the latest development of coronavirus could change everything there. So we probably not very good at giving forecast this time in Europe for this market. Page 18, we look at the free cash flow. We saw that we had a negative free cash flow of $290 million, which is a big change compared with a positive $62 million. The main explanation here is basically we had a small reduction in EBITDA, a small reduction in working capital variation, still positive because we have been able to reduce inventories and accounts receivables, compensate a little bit of also by some decreases in accounts payable. But we had a higher interest paid and received, $19.7 million compared to $39 million. This is common in this quarter because we have more interest payments, especially for bonds during the quarter, and also because we had more debt because of the issuance that we did. A slight increase in income tax paid. But the big reason is that we are spending more. I mean, the CapEx went up from $281 million to $434. And this is basically explained by an increase in the MAPA expenditures. We went from expending $94 million in the third quarter to spending $191 million on the fourth quarter. The other thing that remained stable was that we didn't pay provisory dividends that we usually pay on the fourth quarter. So that's why we have a stable in cash flow from financial activities, which should have been higher if we had paid those dividends. So at the end of the day, our net debt increased $236 million, basically explained by the negative free cash flow. So it went from $4.2 billion to $4.48 billion. Page 19, the evolution of our leverage and net debt. We already talked about the increase from 3.3 to 3.9. I would say that it was a little bit better than we expected in our projections. We were expecting a little bit over four times. For the end of the year, it was at the end 3.9, basically explained by a little bit more of EBITDA and a little bit less of net debt than we were expected in our projections. Our cash and cash equivalents went up 38.6% to $1.56 million, basically explained by the issuance of a bond during October of $1 billion, two bonds, 10 years and 30 years. That a portion of that was spent in prepayments of some bonds. So that's why also we had a similar increase in debt. Total debt increased $654 million. And last 12 months, adjusted EBITDA reached $1.14 billion, 10% lower than Q over Q, and net leverage went up to 3.9, as already explained. If we look in page 20, our maturity profile, we can see there that we have a very well spread maturity profile, especially because of the issuance of new bonds that we did, and you can see that the maturities are more than after 2031 are now $1.8 billion. This year, we have in our short term, in our balance sheet, $530 million. That is $277 million regarding bonds and $253 of bank liabilities. In terms of bank, the biggest portion is related to Montes del Plata, 172. About half of that is amortization that they have to pay in two installments during the year. The rest is short-term financing that is associated with forestry companies that is rolled over. Then we have 69% related to leasings and some of them guaranteed leasing of third parties and also IFRS related IFRS 16 payments related. In terms of bond obligations, we have $44 million related to interest payments and $232 million of amortization local bonds. The biggest of that is $190 million of final maturity in September 2020. So if we discount all the interest payments and rollover of facilities, probably we have to pay about $320 million of amortization during the year, which we can easily finance with our cash position and also the ECA financing that we have still to start the dispersing during the construction of MAPA. Now moving to material facts and news. First of all, page 22, the dissolving pulp project was completed as of February 2020. The startup is expected for April 6th, so less than a month from now. It was originally programmed for January, but we took the decision for operational risk to delay it to April because we were having less flow in the river, in the Cruces River, and we didn't want to take any risk, operational risk. So we thought it was better to postpone it to April once the summer season is ended in Valdivia. Of course, this mill will keep the flexibility of switching from paper grade to dissolving pulp. But we will start producing in April, then testing some of the product with our clients, and so that takes some time, probably 4 to 6 months. We will see some movements in the sales of dissolving pulp. Page 23, MAPA project update. We can see some photographs there of the boiler and some of the construction. The project is about 40% advanced as of February. It's according to schedule. Engineer and purchase of equipment. We have seen a lot of advances in the boiler, digester, boiler feed, water tank, evaporators. They're arriving on site. We have more than 50% of the equipment already on site, and a lot of activity, people working, and equipment arriving from different parts of the world. The startup of the Line 3 is expected to take place in the second quarter of 2021. As of December, we had spent about $600 million from the $2.3 billion budget. Page 24. Some news about some mills in North America that we have decided to close. First of all, St. Stephen in New Brunswick, Canada, that was already closed and in the fourth quarter of 2019. This mill was a very old mill in Canada, more than 50 years old, and wasn't very competitive, so we took the decision to close the particleboard line. The MDF operations will continue. This site. The other mill was Moncure, North Carolina. This mill will be stopped. The particleboard line of this mill will be stopped in May 1st. This mill was designed to be stopped once grayling started. It was a part of the strategy to allocate logistically or for sales. And this is a mill of 262,000 cubic meters of particleboard. And the other mill that we have decided to stop is a small mill in Oregon that produces MDF, 150,000 cubic meters of MDF, Eugene. This mill is also very old, more than 50 years old, and we permanently shut down in May 1st. the accounting deteriorations of Mount Currie and St. Stephen were made in 2017, and we made the accounting deterioration of Eugene Mill during the last quarter. So these closures represent 3.2% and 9.3% of MDF and particle board of the capacity of Arauco. Okay. So it's not so big, and that we were designed to do that way in order to optimize our production. For example, in the case of Eugene, we think that we could be more competitive sending MDF from Chile, from our mill in Chile to the West Coast, that we are very competitive logistically, and we can stop selling a bit of MDF to Mexico from Chile, and then compensate with sales from Brazil to Mexico. So we optimize all the logistics from MDF. Also, the news that in Grayling, we had a fire at the end of January. We had a fire incident in one of the equipment in Grayling, and the mill has to stop for 4 weeks, more or less. The mill started about 4 days ago. This led to an unplanned maintenance stoppage. Luckily, we didn't have any injuries or death. And we think that the losses of this fire could be close to $10 million, probably $8 million associated with the repairment of the equipment, and about $2 million of the business interruption, probably, of the EBITDA lost of Grayling. We have, of course, insurance for this. We have a deductible of $2.5 million, and we are talking with the insurance company. We already got an anticipated payment of $5 million from the insurance company for this. So luckily, the mill is back to operations, and no injuries were done there. Page 25, we renew our committed credit facility during the first quarter of 2020. Just to remember, we had before a line of 320 in two lines, $200 million in U.S. denominated and 120 in U.S. denominated locally committed credit facility. And we renew it with a new line of 375, so we increased the liquidity line with five banks, with only one international committed credit facility that is for 5 years and is due in February 2025. So we have a very good liquidity position now with this committed credit facility that, of course, is for a rainy day. We haven't used it. We didn't use the ones that we had before, and we have this new one just inaugurated. And finally, an update of the forest fire season. At the end of February, we have recorded 1,600 fires in the forest plantations. The area affected is about 2,200 hectares. The burned surface has an accounting value of approximately $5 million. So it's very normal. It's about the same that we had last year. We have been investing a lot of money in prevention, in forest fires. As you can see there, a photograph of the equipment that we brought this year. We had two air cranes, helicopters, that's the one shown in the middle of the photograph, a new Black Hawk that we used, are using during the season for, and other resources. So every year we put more resources. We spend more than $40 million every year in fighting fire and prevention, and we were very, very efficient and very, we did very well up to now. I mean, the season hasn't ended. We still probably have some days until the rain starts to flow in the south part of Chile. But up to now, we're very good, and we have been very, very lucky in terms of forest fires. So this is what I had in the presentation. So at this point, I would like to open for Q&A. Thanks.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions from investors and analysts. If you have a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone at this time. If at any point your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing *2. Questions will be taken in order that they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. The first question today comes from Thiago Lofligo with Bradesco. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. It's actually Isabella here. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the questions. I have two questions. The first one on the pulp market and specifically about expectations of price increases. Given, you know, the level of uncertainty in the market currently due to the coronavirus outbreak, do you expect the momentum to increase more substantially, increase prices to be delayed until the second half? Or do you still expect, you know, some price increases in, you know, late April or May? And then the second question, if you could share your CapEx estimates for 2020, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Isabella. Well, the pulp market expectation is probably very hard to tell right now because we're in the middle of this coronavirus situation. But as I mentioned before, probably I will say that probably in the next 1 or 2 months will be we will see a stable market. And initially, if we thought that the year will come with price increases, probably they will be somehow delayed to the second quarter, as you said. But we don't know yet how quick they will be materialized in the fourth quarter, probably to the second half, sorry. Probably they will reach the same level at the end of the year, but will be more fast during the second half. Because we see that the demand was good in China, inventories went down to normal levels, and we were able to push price increase in February. So I think if this coronavirus situation is solved in Europe, especially quickly, because we think that in China, we are getting out of this situation. They have managed very efficiently, the Chinese. We could have a second half that could be good. But at this time, it's very hard to tell how this situation will evolve in next month. We will see. The prices negotiation for April will start probably next week, and we'll see how those goes, especially in China. Regarding the CapEx for 2020, as you know, probably the biggest part of the CapEx for 2020 is the MAPA project for us. So we are expecting probably that the MAPA will consume probably $1 billion during 2020. And the rest, we could have the business as usual, maintenance, forestry-related things, about $500 million. So a total of $1.5 billion for CapEx of Arauco is what we expect for 2020. I think we will be very close to that number because that's the normal 500 million we always do. We are trying to prioritize all the business usual and things that we could delay. And so we will try to make that 500 lower, but the $1 billion probably is things that we are going to be spending because that's a commitment of payment to suppliers and of equipment and the people working in the construction site.
Okay, very good.
The next question comes from Leopold Silva with Lorraine Vad. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity. And Gianfranco, my first question is regarding the leverage. So I see that your at current levels of EBITDA coming to June, you could be close to $1 billion on a 12-month basis. And now that you have started running at $400 million disbursement before, I see that your net leverage, that your net debt could rise almost to $6 billion, and your net debt to EBITDA north of 5. So my question is, and all of this is assuming that MAPA keeps being on time and on budget, and although we've talked previously about the rating agencies and your dynamics, I would like to ask, for the sake of the situation, a bit more color on this. So I would like to ask if your CapEx would be front-loaded this year or back-loaded, those $1.5 billion that you mentioned. Secondly, I would like to know further if in times like this you cannot receive a clear warning from the rating agencies in anticipation on whether you're gonna lose your rating status, your investment grade status, and if they advise on perhaps what could be a good level of reasonable level of capital raise that you might do, because I'm seeing that your net debt not going below 4 until year end 2021 with the recovery of pulp prices. And finally, instead of a capital raise, does in your special situation the assumption of a parent of a strong parent support be enough in order not to do a capital raise and go through this CapEx period with a 5+ debt to EBITDA? Those are my questions.
Okay, Leopoldo, thanks for your question. First of all, I think we mentioned that we ended the year with a lower leverage than we thought in our projection, so 3.9. We were expecting a bit more than 4. I think we're not going to get so high as you think in terms of leverage. I think it's going to be lower. And of course, it will depend a lot in the evolution of prices during the year. I think we'll be able to stay below five times. I mean, at the end of the year, because we are reducing capex, we're working on reducing our working capital, and we have many things that we are adjusting, and we will be probably below five times. But I cannot tell you right now because it's going to depend on the evolution of prices. In terms of your question about the capex, being front loaded or back loaded, I would think it's more or less evenly distributed during the year. I don't think it's going to be more concentrated in one part of the year or not. The business as usual and the 500 million is, of course, evenly distributed. We planned more evenly during the year. The MAPA, I will say that is roughly well distributed during the year. In terms of the rating agencies, what I can tell you is that we have been properly running our financial projections, I mean, and sharing them with the rating agencies. And also, the three rating agencies have declared in the past months in their reports that they expect leverage to be high during the construction of MAPA. So the current situation is not a surprise for them. And we're talking with them, sharing, and we have more or less the same assumptions of prices, so it's not going to be a surprise, and I'm pretty sure that they will keep us informed of their expectation of ratings and leverage through the end of this year and 2021. For them, it's very important how we land once we start producing in MAPA, so probably more than 2020 is 2020. And at that time, we expect to be much lower in terms of leverage, probably close to three times, or probably lower than that, depending on how the price is in 2021 and how is the ramp-up of MAPA. And also, I mean, to take into account that we have a very solid liquidity position, I mean, we have at the end of the year, 1.5 billion. We still have 1.2 billion in cash. We have this new committed credit facility of 375 million. We have a lot of availability in local bank lines that we are not using. And so the thing is that in order to take any actions in terms of equity contribution or selling of assets, we need to assess a little bit more in next, let's say 30, 60 days, how the price will evolve because of this coronavirus situation and what's going on in the market. And also regarding a possible liquidity contribution from Peso Copec, I mean, we are very confident that we are a strategic investment for them. They have a long tradition of supporting the affiliates. And one very big example is that the recent decision to support the suspension of distribution of dividends during the construction of MAPA project. And also, I mean, probably it's a public knowledge, they are in the process of the of sale of assets. And if this is successful for them, they provide additional liquidity for Empresas Copec. And you should ask more detail of that to Empresas Copec, but I think we have a very strong parent, and we are a very strong company and a very big part of Empresas Copec.
Right, yeah, I agree. I would agree on that. And my last question is regarding the pulp, regarding pulp EBITDA per ton. You mentioned that your costs, cash costs, went down. Your overall Arauco distribution and SG&A expenses went down, and your pulp prices, sales price, went slightly down, quarter-on-quarter. But even though that, your EBITDA per ton was half, almost half of what was the quarter before. So what am I missing here, not taking into account?
No, I think that our cost, cash cost, unitary cash cost went up. I mean, we saw a reduction in cash cost in softwood, but we had a big increase in hardwood and bleach pulp. So I would say that probably an average cash cost went a bit up during the quarter. So it's a mix of a little bit more of cost, of course, a lower price, but also a lot of lower volume compared to last quarter. But I think the most important part probably is volume.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, thanks very much.
Next question comes from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Good morning, Gianfranco. Thanks for all the details. I had two or three quick questions regarding pulp, and then one question on wood products. On pulp, recognizing that this is a balancing act with MAPA now as you're trying to bring the line up and at the same time manage leverage, would at this juncture your intent be to bring up production as quickly as possible so as to get the cash generation as quickly as possible to bring the leverage down? Or given the leverage outlook, would there be any benefit to delaying the project, which might be beneficial for pricing in 21 and therefore beneficial to cash and net debt at that time? So that's question number one. Relatedly, what should we expect this year, given what you know, on Valdivia? How much will be hardwood? How much will be dissolving pulp production this year from what you know? And what should be directionally the outlook for cash costs for hardwood now and commodity grades this year?
Okay. Regarding the MAPA decision, I mean, this is, I mean, very clear. I mean, we would like to ramp up as quickly as possible.
Yep.
Of course, take into account security, accidents, and all that, environment, of course. There's no benefit of delaying the construction of the project. I mean, we have all the resources committed there, and the best thing is to complete the project on time, on budget, and ramp up as quickly as possible to gain the volume and the margins from the sales. And especially because we're going to be the only project ramping up, so we expect to have a good pricing environment at that time, and even if the prices are not so good, we will have positive margin. So we'll be very clear that we will be producing the most that we can from MAPA. In terms of Valdivia, I think that our budget is more or less to produce about 220,000 tons of dissolving pulp, and the rest, 330 of hardwood. This is our budget or intention. We have already produced hardwood, of course, until April, and then we'll be doing some campaigns and mixing a little bit in order to produce the 220,000 tons of dissolving. We don't give guidance on hardwood cost. We will try, of course, of reduce our cash cost in all of our products, hardwood and softwood. I think that depending on reduction in prices of oil, energy, the exchange rate, we should have better cash cost. That will be evolving during the year. We still don't have official numbers for 2020 cash cost.
Yeah, that's perfect. I just wanted a directional view. Obviously, there are a lot of moving parts. My last question, and this isn't necessarily new news or a surprise, but you mentioned a couple of times in the press release the impact that competitors are having in the North American panel markets. Could you give us a bit more color or detail in terms of what actually is occurring in the market? And was that part of what led to the closures in Eugene and the other mills? Thank you, and good luck in the quarter.
Yes, I mean in the North American markets, I think the change that happened was the appearance of newer and bigger mills like Grayling, competing with older mills like the ones that our competitors and us had in that market. So we took the decision to close some of the older mills to balance supply and demand. And there are other mills that are starting in North America that are putting more pressure in some of the markets. For example, there is a new Kronospan mill in Alabama, a particle board mill. And all of these mills are bigger. I mean, that the size of Grayling, 800. And there's another plant that is supposedly going to start in the next 6 months in North Carolina, an Eger particle board mill, that also will add more capacity of particle board in North Carolina, where our Moncure mill is located. So that was also a decision better to close the mill. And there's some small capacity that will supposedly start in the West Coast, in MDF. There's some raw straw rice mill that's supposed to go to start there. So I would say that the trend is newer, more efficient, bigger capacity coming and displacing older mills that were built 50 years ago in the U.S. And everyone is adjusting. Georgia-Pacific closed some mills. We are closing some small mills. And it's normal in this kind of process. Of course, this will be balanced by somehow a better demand in North America that should become with a new but increasing in housing starts. I mean, houses are built. First, you have more demand in some timber, and then those houses has to be furnished in the kitchen, furniture, and closets, and that would make some new demand for particle board and MDF especially.
Thank you very much.
Once again, if you do wish to pose a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. The next question comes from Marcia Farid with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead. Mr. Farid, your line is open.
Sorry, I was on mute. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. I have a couple of questions on my side here. The first one is just a follow-up on your comments on the pulp outlook. Could you please talk a little bit, Gianfranco, about how you're seeing European demand so far this year? I mean, comparing to last year, we saw last year demand declining by more than 10%. Is the expectation that this improves, you know, back to zero growth, or is talking about still negative demand growth for Europe so far this year and considering the outlook for the next months as well? And the second question is on the production outlook for Arauco for the year. Just a follow-up, is Lincasell still down, or you plan to ramp up production of unbleached there over the next months or so? And can I just ask you to restate the numbers you mentioned on the dissolving and hardwood production at Valdivia for this year? Did you mention 220,000 tons of dissolving? And how would this work this year, right? I mean, you're going to be producing dissolving pulp in campaign, so maybe just selling at spot prices, or have you been trying to secure long-term contracts with buyers as well? Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay. Yeah, Marcio. First of all, the outlook for pulp demand in Europe is very difficult to assess right now because the coronavirus is hitting hard Europe at this point. So, I mean, you probably have heard about the situation in Italy. It's a complete lockdown, some cases appearing in more cases in Germany. So it's very difficult to assess how will be demand for coronavirus there. The other thing is that our clients' financial situation is very different in a case of China or Europe. I mean, the paper producers in Europe has always been very weak in terms of financials, suffering low margins, and this could put more pressure on the financial situation, and we could see some things going on in Europe. It's not the case in China that they were having very good margins and very good demand, so they were very solid financially. So we are a little bit afraid about what could happen with European clients over there. We are, in our case, we only sell 15% there, and we have credit insurance for our clients there, but could be somehow hit that, and that could put more pressure on volume going to China instead of going to Europe, and that, you know, pulp is a global business there. There's some talk about the demand for tissue going up, but it's very difficult to assess right now in the middle of a storm in Europe. Regarding the pulp outlook, in terms of production, we were expecting a normal year. We had this surprise for Licancel. Licancel is a very small mill. It's a 160,000-ton mill. We are following the river flow very close. I mean, it's increasing, and we are almost there. I mean, every day we're following, and probably the startup could be coming in the near future, but we need to be very, very sure that we could start that mill. Remember, this is very small mill, discharges in the river and takes water from the river. The problem is not the water inflow, it's the discharge of the river. We cannot discharge if there's very low flow in the river. So, okay, but I think that would be solved very quickly, but we cannot tell you right now. It's something we're following very close. The situation is improving. Not because it's raining again, but because all the agricultural producers there have stopped watering their plantations, and that has put less consumption from them, and that they are upriver from us, so the flow of the river is increasing because of less water consumption from agriculture at this point. But at some point it will start to rain. In Chile, in that part, and that will be solved. We have lost probably 33,000 tons on that mill, that of course won't be recuperated. We compensated somehow by doing a campaign of unbleach in Arauco too, that we did during the summer. But all of all, we think that the rest of the mills should be producing normal as budget through the year. In terms of dissolving pulp, the numbers were closely 200,000 tons for dissolving pulp production in Valdivia, and the rest 300,000 in hardwood production. We don't have long-term contracts. We have some agreements with in terms of testing our products with clients. They are very eager to receive our product, and of course with all this disturbance of coronavirus, we told them that we want to. We will be delayed, and they were very happy to stop a little bit the conversation, but they're going to be gaining conversation again very quickly. So, but we don't have long-term signed agreements, but we are going to be testing our product with them, and we think that we're going to have a very good reception from our clients for our product in Valdivia.
This concludes the question and answer section. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello for any closing remarks.
Okay, thanks all for attending. As usual, the conference call for the first quarter of 2020 will be held probably in the middle of May. And in the meantime, of course, we are open to any questions that you could send us to our investor relations team. Thank you, and see you. And hear you in the next quarter results. Bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a nice day.